Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm Sam Moores. And with us today, we have Philip Hoffman. Hello.
The pleasure is on my side. Sam, thanks for inviting me. I do hope to bring a different point of view or a new approach to the Restomod market. I think we will soon start talking about it. Let's get us in.
yeah. Can you tell the audience a little bit about sort of short summary of who you are and what you do?
This question is actually not that easy to sum up at one point. I think for the most and the leading part of it is I'm a deep dived petrol head. I think as you are, I think in some ways and it's it could be a disease, but it's otherwise okay. it's a deep passion, and I'm really in some ways some call me a fanatic. I think this is the most leading part of it. The other part is, I do have a doctorate degree in biomechanics, and I'm also I do have a doctorate degree in orthopedics. But early on, during my studies, I started to work on cars, and from the university background and the family, I had a deep connection always to the engineering side. And from that point of view, when you build your first cars, it was an E30 BMW, and we prepared for the Challenge series. And first of all, it was just building it by your hands and getting it tuned. And from that point of view, it developed really that I followed all the cars that you, in some ways, you read about the media that you have to have, like the old Porsches. My grandfather, he started all this petrol heads in the family, and he had old Porsche in his garage. And luckily, when I had the license, I drove it. But I loved the classic aspect of it, but it was too slow. The brakes didn't work that good. From that moment on, I tried to work my head around it, how to improve these things. And then I built a classic Porsche, like the R, 911 R, with a highly tuned 2.0 engine. And we struggled so much to make 200 horsepower out of it. And and also on this first journey, I really experienced all the things about old classic Porsches. You think it happens in the US, but actually here in the south of Germany, it's where the roots really started and where all the knowledge is. And from that point of view, I found my footsteps, to build up a team more or less. After this, when I drove this car, I'm sitting here next to the Zugspitze. That's Germany's highest mountain. So I'm really close to the Alps. And I never got to fell in love with driving cars on the racetrack. For me, it's about all getting up in the morning really soon when the roads are empty and then have a blast through the Alps. And I really take a high pleasure of driving cars, but I always drive them, like Magnus Walker tells, the pedal to the metal. that's where you make the most out of this classic cars, in my opinion. But then, of course, I had the first struggles. The engine, it really suffered when the tuned engine, it really suffered, and we rebuild it once. And I also really, the car, in my opinion, lacked a brake booster and also some safety measures like ABS or traction control. If you want really are on it and try to brake through a corner or to a corner in the Alps, and then one tire takes off from the ground, It's you never forgot this moment, huh? That you actually have to lift off, that you have to lift off to gain traction again, to then safely brake for the next corner.
That's a funny one of the location, because I've had a few experiences of being in a car with normal sort of non-modern brakes. And just like one reasonably recently going down a road and I just locked up and you go that little bit further. It was okay. There was actually enough space and whatever, but I imagine having that experience on an Alpine road is a little bit more, it focuses the mind, as you say.
It really does. And on the Alpine roads, when the weather is the most beautiful as it is right now in autumn, you have leaves sometimes, or you have small stones. The roads are not always perfectly clean. So that's why something like this sometimes happens. And I also thought about, it's not enough horsepower. The next thing we did, we built an ST, like really lightweight. Also spec'd, I think you also had it, this SC journey. I did choose the SC as a base platform because it has a brake booster, actually. And then from that point, we backdated it and made it really lightweight. And we had 980 kilos. And then I put a 964 engine in it. And we bought it and made all the tuning stuff for it. And we developed around 340 horsepower after. It was really a long struggle to get there, actually. Like German horsepower, if you measure it, it took quite an effort to get there. And this car, I think this is actually the reason why I started to think a little bit different. What a car needs to be and how we need to set it up. If a car becomes too rough, it becomes so draining, actually. We used to get people here together to have a blast through the Alps that lasts for 2-3 days, and you have stints 300 to 500 kilometers a day. And actually, with driving this car, at the end of the day, I couldn't take it anymore to sit next to a refrigerator because the vibration through the day, it was so intense it's tiring after a long time. And from that point of view, I thought, we take so much money to develop cars that look and feel as we dream about it. But why not take some of it to actually develop cars that drive like you wanted for the moment? And so this journey began 5 years ago that I had in my mind that we set up to build a car where you actually can totally control the driving behavior and the characteristics while driving. Like, you know, from the modern cars, it's easy. All of them have it. If you take an Audi RS or if you take your Porsche, your modern Porsche GT3 product, and they all have it, huh? Like a sport button where everything sharpens up. But in a classic car format, it hasn't been done yet. And also not in an analog character, where you can turn everything off, or you can separate the parameters by your own, so you can really mix it like you want it, and you can change it on a fly.
Yeah, because I guess driving modern cars, when you've got any modern car, you literally point at, like you said, the Audis, the Porsches, whatever, you have like normal, sport plus, or it's Ferrari, it's sport, race, CT off, etc.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And I think most people I know, you want exactly like you're saying, a bit of each thing. You don't actually want everything turned up to the top all the time, yeah, or even most of the time. You might want the suspension backed off a little bit, for example, yeah, especially in the UK.
And some people do hate gear blip, automated gear blip or auto blip.
Yeah.
I do love it. And if you drive a single mass flywheel, it really helps when you drive fast, because it's sometimes you are so focused and that you enjoy the help catching the engine at the right speed. Huh? But you need the freedom to modulate it as you want it. And this journey, I can tell you, really, you need some craziness isn't really involved to actually to stick it to it, to make it all happen at the end, because it was a really long lasting journey. Huh? We developed a steering pump with ZF, and all this starting as a small company in this market, it is a huge effort that actually you can do stuff with the OEMs, but they don't take you seriously at the beginning, huh? So it's you have to put lots of effort in, and it was a struggle for the most of the time. But at the end, it was really it's this, you really bond with something where you can change something as you want it, and you get an immediate reward. Huh? For me, yeah, and of when we talk about the car later, for me, it is the most pleasure I get out of it when the car actually speaks, or like it feels like speaking to you with the automated gear blip. This is something it's so weird when you feel it when you get into a classic car and you brake for a corner and it's a perfectly smooth blip, as Walter Röhr would have done it. And at the moment, you can't get your head around it at the first time, but then it's a really pleasure. And also, you can really change the characters of the car so immediately. And yeah, I had the pleasure to drive most of the cars, the modern stuff. And I, like you also, I fell in love with the 997 GT3 RS. Mm. For me, it was the Mark 1. I think you have the Mark 2.
Yeah.
But if you compare the car we did, like the RSG, RSGT concept, you can add two more layers of rawness to it. Huh? And you have this classic appeal we all love, or I love. Huh? where you have, it's a small, nimble, light car. The smell, and also here where I live nowadays, it's getting, you're getting weird reactions by people if you come by a Porsche or whatever car with a big spoiler on it, and you hide beneath it and you get the smiles for being in a classic. You are more understated, but you have the pleasure of an iconic engine.
Yeah. Okay. Talk me through the process of choosing the car you started with. Like, so you're using a 964, right? Is that right? Yeah.
Yes. Basically, when we sum it all up, the story that led to this, I wanted to have a classic look, and I do love the classic look of the 964 or the 903 RS. And I wanted to keep the design language quite classic. And then I always hunted for the most iconic engines. And the 997 GT3 engine, it's for me, it's one of the most iconic engines. I do love the character. And then actually, if you look at it, the single mass flywheel, it started in the 964 RS and it continued to the 997 GT3 RS 4.0. Oh, it's the same single mass flywheel. So it's the connection to actually make it possible to link the gear, the gearbox to the engine, and to preserve the character of the original car, a 964. But you gain, of course, a lot of more of character and a lot more of horsepower. But it suits the car really well because you gain the horsepower at the upper rev, at the really high up in the revs. So torque delivery and all this, it's really suitable for a small tire. Or small, it's relative. But if you want to keep the car nimble and light and want to have the emotions from around 80 to 160 kilometers per hour, then I think for me, a smaller contact patch, it's important to more feel the car, and the torque delivery is nearly the same. So you can, if you can, you can throw in a short gear ratio gearbox, and then you gain the horsepower and the character high up in the ref range.
Yeah. And so did you do, is it a straight, so you've got a 997 GT3, is it an RS? What?
Yes.
Was it just a GT3 engine that you've modified, and then did it go straight in? Is it air-cooled? Is it water liquid-cooled?
No, it's also something, of course, it's you have to keep it, or you don't have to keep it, but in this time, in this scenario, it is still water-cooled.
Yep.
I think other companies had taken the heads and made them air-cooled. But this is also something I'm not deeply religious about it. I'm looking for a car that can behave and can perform in every environment. And I not only had this feeling once where running under traffic from an auto blast where I thought, oh, this might end terrible with this air-cooled engine in a hot summer day. So water-cooled for me, it's a benefit. This engine, you run it safe in every environment. And also you gain a second benefit, the weight balance of the car. You shift about 7% to the front axle. And if you take the old 911s and make them really lightweight, you always get the troubles by having all the weight on the rear, and you basically lose most of the weight from the front axle, and then the behavior on an alpine road is not in my favorite. So with this setup, you have more weight on the front, better turning, and you have a an engine that will always run cool. And it is a 997 GT3 RS engine, actually. But if you take the Mark One, it's the same, of course, except for the single mass flywheel that was only available in the RS firsthand. And also, this is also something when you start to tune these cars, in my opinion, if you really push them, a tuned engine has its limits. For example, like just daily living, we do have an underground garage.
Yeah.
Did you ever suffered by having a really racy engine with race cams by getting up there without destroying all, like or without getting your neighbors angry? It's not possible. Nobody should come down there for a few hours because the clutch, the smell, and the noise, of course, will wake up everybody who is nearby when you try to get out there. And this is something, if you take the character of the classic car and you combine it with an engine that can be flexible, and the key to flexibility in this, is VarioCam system. You have both. You have an engine that will run smooth on traffic, but is still a race engine high up the revs. You know it as well. So the 997 GT3 engine, I think it can provide both.
Yeah, 100%. And then do you keep it completely stock, or is it changed in any way, shape, or form?
No, of course. For the first prototype, we did keep it completely stock from the internals, but of course, then you need a custom intake, you need a custom exhaust system, and of course, all the programming and all the ECU stuff is custom. So you basically keep the internals, but if you dream about it, of course, this can be. If I thought about it once, maybe in the future, but Alex from Sharkworks, a 3.9 engine, I think this would be the limit. Huh? The 4.1 would be too much, but 3.9 is still absolutely handleable. Huh?
And what is the talk? Let's talk through some of the other elements of the car. What weight are you at the moment?
At the moment, we just focused really on the concept. We haven't started yet with any weight loss, but the car weighs as is with fluids in it, 1,280 kilograms. So it's light already. And we do have a sunroof. There's no carbon fiber in place. We do have some magnesium wheels. That's the only lightweight thing. And we especially designed them for the car. But everything else is basically as stock as it is. Huh?
Yeah. So is the plan, so if people have a look online and they see your car, is the plan for it to evolve quite a bit from where it is? Or the idea is to do, I know you've done a lot of the mechanical parts and steering and all this and the electronics and stuff, but is the chassis and body going to change?
At this point, I do see the most is lying in the electronics and the concept. I do want to showcase a different approach to how we can think about the Restomod market and how we can dream about our dream cars. Yeah. I think taking the pleasure to modulate your driving experience should be a big part of it. And that's where we totally focused on. So it's the steering wheel and the electronics. And I do think it might be the starting point for, I can think about this in so many cars. You won't put it into the cars of the 70s or 80s, but from this 90s, like a BMW E30, if you really put the E46 M3 in, engine in it, you will love to have a traction control by preserving the small contact patch with a small tire. And also make it, we really experienced or we tested the concept with the first button you can turn, you can actually modulate the throttle response, but also the maximum amount of throttle body opening. So you can really dial the car and set up one to a horsepower you may set up. So, and you can also change the VarioCam profile on it. So you basically can really do so many things with it by only one button. For example, if you think about putting a turbocharger on it, of course, then you can put many different maps regarding boost pressure also on it. And that's why you're not only having a different throttle mapping that totally relates to the character of the car when you drive it, but you can also modulate the maximum output of torque power by modulating the VarioCam profile. And this is a benefit for many cars, because actually all the cars I always built, they were too rough at the end to actually still have a use case where you enjoy them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it is because I'm getting older. Like, I have been doing this for 20 years now. I don't know. I'm looking younger than I am. I don't think we are the same age, more or less. I'm 41. And the use cases where you actually can use this really classic and race car type of cars, it is so small.
Huh? Yeah.
It is... It's more a product you enjoy looking at it, and then you need an art gallery where you live, so you can enjoy it every day.
Yeah.
But the times where you actually drive it and you enjoy it, in my opinion, there are too few around. Huh? With this setup, I wanted a car where I can pick up my boy and bring him to school, and have a blast through the Alps. For half an hour later, so you can make the most out of it.
That is quite an interesting way of thinking about it. So with the mapping and the changing the profiles and stuff, can you make the engine more torqueier at lower revs, but less at high, and then you could completely change it so it's actually more linear and more torquey at the high? You can do that.
Yes. This is only the one. This is only one button. Like, if I talk you through the steering setup, you have four independent rotary switches, and what I had in mind. Do you vision the old classic tube amplifiers?
I've got a modern tube amplifier here.
Yeah,
in fact,
where you have your cool. Yeah, I do dream about them as well. So this is something I was looking for in my vision. So you have four independent rotary switches, and they are not linked. On the first hand, I called it roar, like you can modulate the sound of the car. And this is also something that's really new. You have two electric flaps that do close in real time. And you can open them seamless from 1% to 100%.
It's
the same as turning your volume up on the amplifier. It's a small increase if you want it. It's not like... Rah, rah. Have with all the others, the flaps that are boost regulated, and they do only open or close completely.
Yeah.
So this is the first button, and you can also modulate this depending on car speed and throttle position. So you can make them shut low down, and then they open up slightly if you go through the revs. This is really critical also for TÜV compliance.
Right.
Here in Germany, it's really getting tricky and hard to do so. And the system, it is so easy to tell the car it can be 86 decibel at 100 kilometers per hour, and you can really tune it exactly to that spot. That helped all the way, and it is a pleasure using it because you can modulate it, put it a few notches more in it as you want it, and you have the freedom to exactly have the sound environment you are dreaming about. And this, nice. The second switch you have on the left side is gear blip. I think this is the system that actually it took the longest effort to make possible. Because if you compare, let's run through a different few cars that and how they do it. I think, do you know the modern BMW Mini? Mm-hmm. Like they also have rev match, but they do it like if you shift down, it holds them on the plateau until you put the gear in. This feels totally artificial in a classic car. It still feels in the modern car totally artificial. Yeah. It's totally out of place. You want this to be exactly human. So we then had a custom software upgrade by one of the biggest ECU suppliers, where we can modulate when the auto blip occurs, how sharp it is, and how the maximum amplitude is. So, and you can turn it by a few few positions. Like if you do the normal driving in a car mode, you want the auto blip to be a little bit relaxed. But if you are on a racetrack and you're really, really pushing on, it has to be sharp and high and really close to the shift.
One of my earliest memories of auto blip was it would have been in town in some sort of, it might have been my Cayman GT4 or something like that at the time. And changing from like second to first in town.
Yes.
And it just goes like, BAM! And you're like, oh no, this is awful.
I know. I do actually notice, but this is actually why it took nearly 3 years to modulate the system where it feels absolutely human and where you, to put it also in four different categories. Like I first started with a rotary switch where you have 8 positions. You don't need 8 positions. It's way too much. You can't make the nuances so small that you still feel the difference between the parameters. But four in a setting, it's perfect. But you then, if you compare it to the GT4, you still have a more benign position in our setting now. And this is, it really feels, it took a long way to actually make it feel human, like really somebody driving it being one of the best drivers like Walter Röhrl. Because in my opinion, we all love to tell somebody that we actually don't need these systems. But nowadays, and also all the journalists who drove it, they found it a pleasure having it. Because with the single mass flywheel and also with our ECU system, you can't believe what reserves are in a 997 GT3 engine stock-wise if you keep the internals. And if you take the best ECU system available, the increment or the you can gain so much more in rev change. You can make the engine rev so much quicker than in really? Your stock application. It's unbelievable. We have run through 4 clutches because actually with the Autoblip system, the engine was revving so fast that the clutches got loose. The pressure plate was falling apart because of the change in speed.
Yeah.
This was, you have never heard about it. I think in the media we also, and this is it's unbelievable what this engine has still to give if you take a different ECU system to it. And the third switch is actually a traction control system. We kept it on 8 positions. I think this is a switch I normally never use. I have it in position 3 or 4. And it's unbelievable if you have this motorsport ECU system. The system is so much better than in every road car.
Yeah.
It's really seamless. And we have tested a lot of this during winter. And it's also... It gives you a big smile if you are sitting in your classic car, pedal to the floor in winter conditions, snow on the road, and the car keeps driving totally smooth around the corners. you can really push it and it still works. Of course, normally you always, when I dreamt about this and set the use case for a car like this.
Yeah.
Of course, you will never drive it in the snow. But sometimes if you are on the Alps and you are in a really big rain shower, that's something where you're happy about it.
It happens.
Huh? Yeah, because you exactly. can keep on pushing it. Like I heard in your podcast, it's because it's sometimes it's critical. If you lose an old 911, and if you're not quick enough, you will crash.
Sometimes these things happen, and I'm with you. Like, I think it's, I don't know whether it's an age thing or just you've experienced different experiences. Like, this sort of driving I do now is a bit different to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. There's certain times when I'll be like really on it, but most of the time, not so much. But the engine profile thing sounds, that sounds quite interesting, because on the road, let's say I've now got a 992 GTS. I got it like a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And I'm like a sort of, I would say like dyed in the wool. I guess that's the right expression, a UK expression, but like a serious NA enthusiast. I like naturally aspirated engines, and the GT3 engine is phenomenal. But on the road, in that car, it's very good, but how rarely am I revving it all the way out and to get the power that it can give and feel the performance? You've got to be revving it. And
yes,
mine's quite loud. And that just doesn't happen very often. And I'm very aware of like other people around me when I do that, of like the sort of image, almost like the image I'm projecting.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to go everywhere at 9,000 RPM or 8,700 or whatever it goes to. Whereas in the GTS, it has so much torque down below. I'm never anywhere near the rev limiter because you're just smashing it, riding the torque, and then enjoying the next gear and off you go. And it's a much easier car to drive, even just quickly, but sociably. Around, I find at the moment, and that idea of being able to change, like if I in my GT3 I could change a switch and it had a bit more low down torque, that would be great. And then also I would love an auto blip into first gear, like not a second, I'm all right, but into like first in the Alps would be really useful.
Yeah, I'm keep on smiling because you can look at it from 2 different perspectives. If you talk to the engineer, the BarioCam system offers complete flexibility at every rev position. So why making an engine torqueier down low and losing the torque high up?
Yeah, well,
why
no need to
program
do that, yeah.
something like this? Yeah?
Yeah,
this wouldn't make any sense from the engineering side of view. But this is something I also really. Driving a car has two different perspectives, and at the end, your emotion is the winner every time. For example, if you take the exhaust system, you don't take any pleasure out of it gaining 7 more horsepowers at the end. We've built 4 complete systems for this car. And at the end, the system that I fell in love is completely noise related. You want this engine note to pitch higher with the higher you get in your revs, and it has to be the continuation. But actually, a different exhaust system, it had 7 more horsepowers, but that's not the point in my. That's not the point in it's or these cars that you use. You are using just for pleasure, and it's just. Your emotion is the most part of it. And if you want to celebrate naturally aspirated engine, this is also something I learned from really along the way. You don't need an engine to rev to 11,000. You shift immediately when you feel the power loss.
Yeah.
And that's something, and also this is something while programming all this, we struggled severely to make this 997 engine more like a 991 engine in comparison to peak power at highest RPM.
Yeah.
The Mark 1, especially, it flattens about 7,200 to 400. It has peak power there. And you immediately shift there. There is no need to get to 8,600 if you want it. And this is also something that, this is actually for me, at the moment, became the most important value that you have the peak horsepower at highest RPM, and then you actually will rev the engine there.
That's interesting. I'd never really thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense in cars like 991 GT3. You shift when it stops kind of pulling a bit more, and it's always in that car. It's always early.
Yes, and if you feel the loss, it's always the torque curve in the Boxster engines. It flattens and then it falls sharply at the end. And you immediately feel it. And this is something where you shift naturally. If you wouldn't have any rev counter, that's where you put select next gear. And with this, from the emotional setup, this is the most important part. So you have to modulate the VarioCam system more like being on a hike to a mountain. Huh? You want to get to the summit.
Yeah.
And so the design this wise was more getting the band starting slow down low and keeping it continue the rise to the summit. And I do know actually why it in the market something or it's rarely be done, because if you start with the 997 GT3 engine and the VarioCam system with the blank sheet, it's a nightmare, and lots of work has been involved in tuning this engine. And also a company developed that Nowadays, it's actually a company that also runs good profits that developed on the way that, yeah, troubleshoots OEM ECUs. Because at the beginning, of course, I tried to take it all over. But it wasn't, you couldn't rely on the system. And of course, then you are stuck with the setup as it is already in place. And all the other parameters I wanted to choose or make flexible and variable, I couldn't add on. So that's why then we started with a blank sheet. And then for years with the ECU suppliers, we had our custom software set up to actually then have the freedom to put different parameters and combine them and make them switchable on a steering wheel.
Yeah.
So this is when I sum it up where we want to go or where I want to go with this. And I cannot relate to myself. I teamed up with the most experienced people out there. Some help came through some of them being a patient from me, others family related. But and others, dear friends from the long journey I already had in the beginning. So the team of Reutmeier and Christian Mittermeier, I think they are the most experienced Porsche guys out there you can find in, I think, in Europe or worldwide related. They did all the OEM stuff. And then from my connection to the university, I had so much deep knowledge and access to the most valuable knowledge around to make something like this happen. Like the engineers that help with those are normally working for like Pininfarina Battista. They help with the mold for some of the parts. Others. Like, I have to make you a vision how the Technical University in Munich works. It's such a lovely place, actually, because there you have the engineer from BMW, one of the head engineers for the developing of the new BMW M3 engine, and he's casting molds for the engine cased. On the one left side, on the right side, he's made.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Making molds for his wedding rings. And then there is a place, it's a prototype facility. They found it. And there comes all this knowledge together. You have the most modern machinery where you can really do everything you dream about. And then these guys come there also because I think that it's so easy-handed and it's so way quicker to develop something on your own there. In BMW, tell me, could we have a cast molded prototype? we need for stress testing. And then it will take 1.5 years. So they then just go on and do it by themselves. But actually, because you have the ability to do so.
Yeah.
And only through this background, we could develop it's a car, actually. Because if you look at it, the perspective, everything has been changed. Of course, we kept the design and the chassis, but beneath it, you have a custom oil system, a custom gauge cluster, complete bespoke car management, electronic-wise. You have a bespoke intake, everything nearly. And if I tell you also what was the hardest on this journey, actually to develop a car that is at the end in harmony with what it wants to be.
Yeah.
To have all the parts actually that has the same emotional setup and they are still related to each other if you drive in rowdy mode or if you calm it down a little bit. Of course, you cannot set these cars up to run them like a comfortable old Mercedes. And I think that's not the use case. But if you compare it to like, I take your GT3, you can make it livable and add two more layers of rowdy emotions on top of it.
Yeah.
When you want it. And yeah, that's basically the setup.
It is an interesting concept. And like with the exhaust, what sort of programming are you doing on the exhaust? Being able to have it open from any degree of naught to, you know, open. I've never come across that in an exhaust system ever. They're always open or shut. And the open or shut situation in any car that I've owned, I've always removed it. I've always gone, well, either have just control and I want it open or I want it shut. There aren't many scenarios.
No,
well, I've never been able to do it. So I go, okay, maybe 90% would be really good sometimes. Maybe 70.
Yes, but I can show you a reward why that something like this hasn't been done in this situation. Like I patented this whole setup. On the steering wheel that you can make it like how you modulate it actually. Huh?
Yeah.
This is also, it was a huge journey actually to get this licensed by Germany. But this also tells, there's nothing comparable actually on the market. And yeah. I do tell you what I found worth for it, fighting for it, because I do look at this car totally from the emotional side on it. And you can support the engine characteristic, like I spoke before, with the VarioCam system, that you make it more linear, and you have to go to the summit, and you can support all this emotional setup really well with the flaps, by increments. So then you get the perfect acoustic and exhaust that are also really high up in the rev limit, I think. But looking at from a stock perspective to the 997 GT3Rs, it is already a lovely system. Don't get me wrong. But low down, it could be quieter a little bit. If you take off... leave and let the family still sleep. And this is possible. Like, yeah, when I get up in the morning from the underground garage, I do not want to wake up everybody.
That's interesting. I'd not thought about it. So you're actually, one of the things you're doing is you're mapping it from top revs to low revs in a straight line.
Yeah, it's not, yes, you open up, I can show it to you.
You can open it up and...
Yes, it's more or less in a straight line. Like one of these.
I can quite see that. Yeah.
You can see it. It's like these are four different setups. And you can, of course, you can start with how much router you want in it at the with starting up.
Yeah.
And of course, you can also program it in that when you start the engine, like on the modern cars, the exhaust flap for a few seconds is opened and then it closes. But for now, I left some of this out. In a classic car, you also need to relate to the classic setup you have. You cannot fuss with it too much. Auto blip, for example, is already, for some, it might be a sacrilege to do so. But I try to preserve the character of classic cars as we do love them. But I try to really focus on the emotional setup that a car can give you when you push it.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds quite cool. And it sounds like I want to experience these different things because I can tell you've spent, and the team, a lot of time working on all of these different elements. And how that relates in reality is...
It's basically you can explain it really like this. If you put everything in a sharp position at high end, you would not want to live with this car for long. If you are in a traffic then, or if you're coming home, it will shout, it would be really aggressive, and you would not want to live with this long. But if you were only able to have this one setup, you actually would need to dial it back. But now you have the freedom to dial it back when you need it, and you still can preserve the rowdy if you want to. And the pleasure is really only up there. That's why it's really also hard to tell the journalists what to make out of the cars, because I told him this car is only really awesome at one point. It can be the most aggressive rowdy on the streets you can ever imagine. And you really have to push for it there. But somebody who gets into the car, of course, then, it's expensive and it's lots of work and there's only one around at the moment. It's hard to get this emotional layer to them because you need to, of course, you will not learn the car in 20 kilometers that you will want to go for the next layer and the next layer. So that's why I then got into the car and drove them around a few times, and then then you can help them actually.
I find that is always really good. Like if I get into someone's car, like say I got into, you know, your build, I'm not going to go, you know, minute one flat out on some scenario, some roads I don't know in a car that there's only one. Like it takes a long time to build up to that. And me just personally, I also just don't drive other people's cars that hard because they're other people's cars. If it was on track, I would probably drive a bit because there's, you've got a bit more leeway. But then I often try and get someone else to drive a bit first, just so you're like, okay, I've got a reference point. I know what we're working with now. And then, okay, we'll go from there.
But actually taking this car for a reference, I think you would quite feel home immediately, because we had a 9 and 7 GT3 RS for reference. Most of the time, and taking the looks aside, it drives like a stock 997 GT3 RS. Also, from steering point of view, shifting, it's the linkage and all of this is also made for us. I wanted to have more effort. Like in an old car, you need to use your shoulder. On the modern cars, you're only using your hand shifting. But on all the cars, you need to use the shoulder. So the linkage is longer, but it is without any slack. It's harsher than the stock 997 GT3S. So you really have to nail it to really have fast shifts. But then it's great. Take this, take a 997 GT3 and add two more layers of harshness and rowdiness, and you can imagine what it might feel.
What size rear tires are you
265.
Oh, tiny.
Yes. you need to have a tiny, but you know it as well. When it's dry, the Porsches have the best traction
so much
ever.
Grip.
And also, if you have a modern tire, there's no problem at all at any situation. Huh? You may lose this if you put 4 liter or even more in this car, but up to that, it's perfectly handleable. Like a small contact patch. You feel the car more. You get this car to be enjoyable lower down in the speed limit. I designed this car totally just to live in the spot between 80 kilometers and 160, maybe 200 kilometers. And this is not an Autobahn car where you push to 280 or whatever. You wouldn't do so in a classic car, or in my opinion, I wouldn't do so. You have all the emotional setup, what you can enjoy on B roads, more or less.
That sounds what it's all about. And suspension wise, are you using a tractive system?
No, I thought about it, but at the moment we have this KW suspension system, and I found it really livable in every situation. But of course, taking all the system, making everything variable, to add this to the suspension system, of course, would be a perfect add-on, in my opinion. I had to focus on what we wanted to achieve. And the suspension system, I knew that good systems already out there, so I did not touch on this
yet. And with the plans to build complete cars for other people, or do you want to sort of send a package of powertrain, etc.?
That's actually not an easy question. I don't know yet. The effort and coming from the background, everything on this car was CAD designed. So it's 100% copied easily.
Yeah.
And the most of it is actually on a USB stick. That's the most valuable thing on the car. So I think nowadays I try to take a step back. It has been 5 years of immense stress to actually get there where we are at the moment. So I want to see if I'm the only guy with this rusty nail in his head, totally on what my vision was, to see what can develop out of it. Of course, the team and all the rest of it, everything can be set up to do every of those, to supply a system, like an electronic system, to other cars, to other companies, but also team up, grow a little bit, and build a few cars on our own. I don't mean by myself, but on the most experienced car guys for Porsche that are here in Germany, and I are already team-wise with us from the beginning on. So, but I need to take this at the moment to calm down a little bit and see what actually what the feedback will be. So that's why that's also what is I appreciate to talking to you, because if you bring something new to the market, it's not actually easy. It's because you have to. Everybody has their opinion about how a Restomod or a classic car that has been tuned or looked after or reimagined has to look like. And then we have a totally different approach. So it's a really struggle. You have to tell it on and on. And if you are a newcomer in the market, you don't have any speak or you won't be listened to. So that I will take the time to keep on telling my vision, and then we will see what comes out of it.
Mm. Sounds like a good approach. On the dash, you have a digital screen in one of the gauges.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Like if you look at the instrument cluster, of course it looks classic, but there is a few more layers also onto this. You have traction lights integrated into it. That will shine in blue, and you also have a rev limit, like shift lights integrated into it.
Okay.
This looking into the system from the digital system, this could be a journey in itself as big as the whole car.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I teamed up. For the moment, a navigation system is working on it.
Yeah.
But of course, I kept on pushing that we can have some engine telemetry also be shown there and tire pressure and tire temperature. This is possible, but it's also something. If you start with a round instrument, you are gaining problems that you won't think are possible at the beginning. And that's why it's really interesting. So I don't know why there is not a big company already out there doing such things.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the instruments, they are all denormed. That's a pleasure, actually. So if you would design an instrument that will fit to the medium-sized DIN norm, you can retrofit it to nearly every existing car out there.
Yeah.
But at the moment, you have a navigation system, and this was a struggle on its own. and also with friends who do this for BMW motorbikes, the head engineers for the management system there, and we had lots of conversations and team meetings with different companies. It's actually not that easy to make everything possible in the system.
No, it sounds really interesting. Like it sounds like what you've done is, I want to experience it, see what it's like. So I normally wrap these up with five questions. You ready?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
Yes. it's not only car related, of course. It's those car meetings where we gather together a few people here in end of September. It was called Pass Mastered because it doesn't live on any longer. But it was this circumstances where my first son was nearly to be born every day to come.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take this drive, of course, but then you'd start to drive and you cannot go. You cannot leave your wife, or you have to drive really fast back home. So it was this really emotional setup where you're somehow, your nerves are already really have a high tension when you start the trip. And... Yeah, but I love these autumns here in the Alps. And nowadays, like the last week, it was a dream actually here. Huh? It's and every day here is a pleasure. But I must say, yeah, I only take the pleasure out of it when the roads are empty and you're really early in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you have to push the car for 35 minutes or 40 minutes to the maximum, and then you calm down and then you hear the exhaust like a fireplace crackling. And the engine back still warm. You don't need any heater because the car is so warm on the inside because you pushed all the fluids to maximum. That's, I can tell you many moments, but they all take place here in the Alps. Huh?
Yeah.
I've tried a track day once, but it makes me nervous with all the others actually. And I don't find the most pleasure out of it actually driving on a ring, on a circus, really aggressive. I set up a small journey where I want to go and then make pleasure out of it getting there.
Yeah. I'm with you. There's something about that, and being a photographer as well, being a photographer of cars, you always are doing sunrise. Like that's kind of the best time. Sunset's pretty good, but it's not as good as sunrise. And then when you get up at whatever, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and the sun's just coming up and you go out and there's no one around.
Yes.
It is really special.
Yes.
Just you being have to- there at that time of day.
I absolutely, I'm completely with you. If you look at the website, you have to have a visit to Silvetta Hochalpenstraße. The scenery there, it was all captured, as you told, in the early, the golden morning hour. But we did it in July. So you have to get up really, really, really early.
It's better now.
So you basically, I had settled the team for 4:30 in the morning, but we actually achieved with all the equipment to start at about 5:30. And it was the same intense feeling at the beginning. Oh, we're already 1 hour late.
Yeah.
We really have to push on. We don't know the location yet. We have to get there. It was the same emotional setup as I described before with my son being nearly on the way. And I really also, this is also a moment I can deeply relate to, one of the best driving experience for us, especially with this car we had also with us. This is also, do you know Morgans?
A little bit, yeah.
My father, he loved them as well. And we all had always had a Morgan around, and I related to them as, I don't want to be offensive to the company, but they never worked and you couldn't drive with them, in any situation. In the summer, they overheat, and for rainy days, you get wet in the inside. But then my father had this Morgan came up in the UK during COVID, and it's a RR V6. It's a Morgan race car, and they only built five of them. And we totally, then the car arrived here and it had no road license. Then we build a road car out of it.
Okay.
And it's actually, for the money, it's such an awesome car. It only weighs 800 kilos and has a Cosworth map for the Mustang V6.
Okay.
You actually feel like flying a Spitfire through the grounds with the side exhaust pipes.
And all the louvers on the front.
Yes. And the car looks so beautiful on the outside. But comparing, of course, to the Porsche, this car can only offer one layer of emotion. It's really rough and it's really scary. If you get into this, you will never want to have a crash in a Morgan. Never, ever. Because, I don't know, should this happen. It was a pleasure having those both cars up there on the morning Alpine Road, and the street, the road in itself, Silvetter Hochalpenstraße, is one of the best Alpine roads you can ever imagine. It has these really high speed flowing corners where you can see the corners in 1.5 kilometers in front of you.
All right,
so you can really push on and still have the best view. I think this is also really critical when you drive Alpine roads. You have the best view around that no bikers will cross your lane.
Well, that sounds like a good one. If you could only drive one car for the rest of your life, sports car, what would it be?
It's obvious,
I guess.
It's also not an easy question, actually. Like, if I talk to my friends and colleagues and partners of the company, they always tell me, like, for example, that the car was on the RST was on photo shooting 3 days ago, and they picked it up in the morning, and in the afternoon he came back and he thought he also has a Porsche GTS. And he told me, Philip, this is just the perfect car. And so I probably would choose this car if I would not have been with him from the first minute. Because I know if you're building a prototype, all my gray hairs nearly are related to this car. And I can normally take lots of stress and work my head around it. But I got to a few points where I really thought, not again. And of course, only electronics. Building a car, I think this is also something that's really lacking in the market. Engine size and mechanical part, there are huge companies and a lot of companies around. But on the electronic side, there are not many around that actually can really program well and do harness specs and all the stuff. And I got to know, I think, most of them during the journey. And then I had to focus on a team that normally does high-speed trains and airplanes and space rockets. To get all the software implemented.
What do you think is the most undervalued car at the moment?
Undervalued car, I think exactly what we are speaking about, these 90s greatest hits cars. I think also if they gained already a lot of money during the last 10 to 15 years. Our PlayStation generation, I think I would count myself to being one of the early PlayStation generations. I think they will appreciate them even more down the road. And they are, from the emotional driving experience perspective, the best cars, the 90s to early 2000s. The early cars, they have so many flaws. And also, if you compare it like with the brand side of it, I think the Porsches, you will struggle to find anything else that drives as a complete package as sporty as they do. I think in comparison, like a Fiat 500, I can't make my head around it, how there is anybody around able to drive those early, really early cars where you don't have any synchronized gearbox. Yeah. It's terrible hard. They are work of art, but you have to enjoy them looking at it.
It's a really tricky one. I find, because I just sold my SC, so my backdated SC this week. I just don't use it that much at the moment. But I was kind of like looking at like, where would I, if I was to replace it or get another car of that sort, where would it go? Where would it sit? And I like the idea of an early car, whether it was an old Alfa or an early 911, like, I don't know, 68 or something like that. But then there's part of me that knows I like to use stuff. Like, I really do like to use stuff, and I kind of like to just be able to get in it and drive it. So then you're like, where do you sit in the in the timeline of then to now? And 964 is quite a good time for that, because it still feels old. Nowhere near as old, but you have a lot of the stuff like electronic ignition and those sorts of things that just work, or at least kind of work. It's a tricky one on that.
Yeah, but if I'm honest, I don't know. It's really hard to name any car actually for me, because I always then started to make those cars my own. I've never, like, from the 70s to the 90s, I always was, I don't know, they never got to me when they were stock.
Yeah.
That's, but let me know your thoughts on why did you sell your SC? It was from the outside, and it was a lovely car to look at. And
it was a nice car. The reality was, of where I'm living at the moment, I'm in a rental that has no garage, none, zero. So my GT3 is parked like on my drive in front of my house. It's not at the moment. My GTS is there now, but I had no parking. And then I've got a 2-year-old, or he's not quite two, but nearly two. And I've just had no time to drive cars at all, really, or at least like in a fun way. So I've really been looking at the cars that I've owned and currently own and go, right, do I drive this? If I've got one weekend, am I going to choose this car, or am I going to choose something else? And the reality was, with that car, I'd driven it a lot. I had a lot of fun in it, but I think I'm starting to get to the point where I'm like, I think I would rather have something else. Like, if I was to sell it, would I buy it back? No. And I was like, okay, well, maybe you should sell it and wait until, try a different experience.
Yeah, because may it be that you love it from the outside and from the inside, but when you're actually driving at it, it lacks the emotional summit when you drive it, huh? Or am I like that was actually the case always for me driving those kind of cars, and with these early engines, you either have not the reliability when you really build a race engine out of it, or you are like, yeah, you only have a small summit, like a really, it's only 300 to 400 feet.
I know what you mean. There,
you don't have any climax, emotional side of, from the emotional driving experience, actually. You can have so much more driving your 997 GT3S or driving something that's really raw.
Interesting one. It is. I think part of it is, I think with that car, or that space in my garage, if I retain a space, is for something that's old and feels classic. I think I like something like that, but I think edging towards, I've not driven a really early 911, so I couldn't comment on that. But something like, I love the idea of like an Alphaholics.
Yes.
It feels a bit like, I don't know, have you driven a Caterham?
Yes.
Like that, a car you get in that you kind of, it makes you want to go sideways on the first corner that you're going. Mm-hmm. And like, just have a frantic half an hour experience and then put it away. Drive something else. Like, I think I'm leaning towards that kind of situation with that car. Like driving my nine, every time I drive the 997, I'm just like, oh, this is just a really good car. It feels older now, which seems odd because I've had it for so long, and it driving the 992, the 992 is clearly much more modern. And there's good points about that. And then also some bad, but most drives I have in the 997, I'm like, this is just really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but actually making a, or you may think this can't be true. You should drive our Morgan. It's actually, it's a Caterham R500 and the beautiful looks of a classic car. But it's it really feels like it, and it doesn't have any leaf spring at the front or rear. Mm. But it's the same approach as the Alphaholics. It's a beautiful car on the outside, and you still have a raw and racy and nimble car while driving it. But of course, you also invited, of course, to try the RSGT. I think it can also deliver on this both so well that you you can calm it down a little bit, but still have a really rough driving enjoyment, but still be able to take my wife sometimes with me. Because like when I had this really early 911s, you mostly ending up with driving on your own all the time. Yeah. Because it always was too rough. Huh?
Yeah.
And it's also then sometimes too rough to go to a dinner somewhere in the evening or...
Yeah, you've got to step over.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. With you. And it sounds like with your early cars, you took them to the...
Yes.
You know, you pushed them to the extreme end.
Yeah, this was always, of course, a development through all the years. But I always thought, oh no, these brakes can be better. Like also now with the RCT and the photographs I did send you, you can see development of the car. Like at the end with Brembo, we have now our own brakes. And I think these are the biggest brakes on every 964 they have ever been. But I thought, oh no, you can always have the 993 turbo setup.
Yeah.
But still can be more, and this was always the feeling. I think when I had older cars, so that you start with something and then you really keep on evolving it over the time as you dream about it.
Yeah, and then at some point, I don't know. In theory, you have to draw a line and go, that's the end. I don't know.
That was over.
Yeah. That was a while.
Sometimes you are not actually the one drawing the line. It could be in your next
your
environment.
Bank balance or whatever. Yeah.
Your wife, for example, the dangy. Exactly.
Right. What is the most interesting car for you at the moment? What are you looking at, Googling? Maybe new, maybe old, or just part of yours that you're developing?
Actually, it's not only one car, it's the whole setup of where cars are going in the future. And I try to think about it a lot. And I think with these companies, I think the car, if money would not be an issue at all, I would try to get a T50 or T33 by GM or GMA from Gordon Murray. And I think this whole theme will develop further, I guess. I think the natural aspirated engine, it will become a luxury item in the future, as something, and so many companies are growing in this niche sector. And I could imagine, for example, if we turn 15 years onwards, also the big companies then come back to their old car fleet to then get them back in, tune them, modify them, restore them. Because these are actually, there is a whole fleet out there with naturally aspirated engines that have the license to go further. And I think nobody in the politics will one day will tell us that we are no longer allowed to drive our own classic or old cars. But in the future, I don't know, I think the plug has already been pulled. And also if the UK is going backwards now having a death date for the combustion engine, I think the industry already has has made the decision. But I'm looking forward for this perspective in the future that there will be so many great cars in a niche, and this market will grow continuously, I think. But I hopefully will be able to afford one of these.
Yeah, it would be really cool if, let's say, in 5 years' time or whatever, Porsche started going, if you want to bring your 997 GT3 RS or whatever back, we will, maybe 10 years' time, we'll do a bit of a restoration, but also we've developed your stuff a bit more.
Yes.
ECU, everything. Like, that would be so cool. Because they did a 996 last year. Was it called the Club Coupe or something? And they did one 996, and they basically made a GT3, but with a lot of stuff from, developed a bit. It was bought by Seinfeld. I can't remember what it was called. It was like a 996 GT3, but built today by Porsche.
Yeah, it may also be then that they... Yeah, I do think that something in the future will be possible. And if you also look at the legislation, that combustion engines are still legal to produce unless you are producing less than 100 vehicles a year. So this clear tells the road to being a luxury item, and maybe the OEM suppliers coming back to their existing fleet one day.
It's difficult to tell, isn't it? Because we don't know what public demand is going to be like in 15 years. I mean, currently, to be honest, I'm a bit worried about what the world is going to be like in 15 years. So who knows about what the car side of it is. But yeah. Right. Final question. 5-car garage, unlimited value.
I would want to have my two early cars back. That they actually had to be part of the budget for the RSGT. But I do miss them for these few occasions or kilometers a year. I would have one of these crazy cars from GMA, I guess. Or probably McLaren F1 if budget is not an issue. And for a family car, I would have one family car. It can be just a normal SUV. I don't care about brand, or one SUV for taking kids to school. And the rest can be fun cars and a few bicycles. Like three of my own, one of GMA, one SUV, and and a few F1. Bicycles.
Some bicycles, fair enough. Yeah, nice. Job done. All right, well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
It was a pleasure being on your podcast, talking about cars and the future about emotional driving.
Yeah, it's been very good. Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.